The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Gradually, and now faster and faster, a new power is being developed from underneath the surface, a new world power, which the public now least suspects, which the world does not yet see, doesn't realize, doesn't dream is coming, but it is developing just as prophesied in Europe, a resurrected Roman Empire that will combine some 350 millions of population, a power so mighty that our Western peoples will stand aghast when it flashes suddenly into full being. Yes, your Bible says that the world will be startled.
This thing that is soon to come, this thing that is going to dumbfound the people of the world. I want to tell you, my friends, the politicians of the great nations that are actually helping to build this thing and don't realize that they're only building a Frankenstein that is going to turn on us. They're going to stand aghast when this thing happens. Your Bible says so.
But I believe that some event is going to happen suddenly, just like out of a blue sky, that is going to shock the whole world and is going to cause the nations of Europe to realize they must unite. Well, he said he believed that would have to happen too. Well, now I think I can see what may be the very event that is going to trigger it, and that is the economic situation in the world.
We could play those clips for you probably every other day, and they don't get old. There's so much to pull from them each time. He's talking about this empire that's being built, and it's rising on the scene faster and faster. But the aspect that I want to focus on for today's show is that we don't realize what is happening. Mr. Armstrong said there that our people will stand aghast when this Holy Roman Empire is resurrected. He said that it will dumbfound the people of the world. He says we're helping to build it and we don't realize that we're building a Frankenstein monster. It's going to shock the whole world. In many ways, if you're an American right now, you probably look at Europe and laugh at Europe, think that it's a joke. They can't get anything done. They're too socialist. They can't accomplish anything. America is mighty and strong. Maybe you think Europe is not a threat, but it is a seething pot of anger. And President Trump thinks that it's an ally. A lot of people are naive. A lot of people are asleep about the threat from Europe because they think they are our allies. In this program, I want to go through a few articles about Germany's defense industry and its economy. And then I want to just contrast that towards the end about just how oblivious the United States is at the moment. We talk a lot about the stories that consume media time in the United States. And the story that I'll focus on later in the show is just the drug addiction in America and how hard people are fighting to be able to have access to drugs so they can be lulled to sleep, so they can escape. They don't have to pay attention to the world. They don't have to pay attention to the hardship. And then for the final bit of today's show, we'll play a segment from Gadi Taub's assembly that he gave for the Armstrong College students. We've broken that up into a few segments, so we'll conclude today's show with that. Welcome back to the Trumpet Daily. I'm Sam Livingston, your host for today's show. Thank you for joining us on today's program. If you have comments for the show, send those to td@thetrumpet.com. Please subscribe to our YouTube channel, The Trumpet Daily, and of course on Rumble as well. The first article I want to read is from Deutsche Welle, and it's titled EU Seeks Self-Reliance as US China Dominate Defense Sector. The United States predominantly is the world's number one arms manufacturer. It says the US has been the biggest weapons exporter in the world for over two decades, accounting for 35% of global arms sales. Following up after that is Russia, then France, then Germany, and China. So 75% of the world's weapons come from those nations. And Europe and Germany especially, despite being one of the biggest arms producers or arms exporters, is heavily reliant on the United States. There is no way to change the dependence on the U.S. in the short term, said Alan Mattel, a political scientist and senior research fellow with the Center for Security and Defense at the German Council on Foreign Relations. That's a big title. One example is the decision by many European countries to purchase F-35 fighter jets from the U.S. And doing that, again, means that they're tied to U.S. infrastructure. They need the tech updates from the United States. They need arms or just components for that jet for repairs are going to come from the United States. Any technical support that they need is going to come from the United States. And that pegs a lot of these countries to the U.S. Now, that doesn't mean these weapons won't be turned against us. Bible prophecy says that they're going to use these weapons. They're going to use America's own nuclear weapons against us because we naively trust in these nations that we believe to be allies. We trust them with our greatest weapons. The rest of the world, again, doesn't want to be dependent on America, but it takes a long time to get off of that dependency. And this article just talks about, and some of the other ones I'll read, focus on how, well, they're just trying to look to other nations, you know, as they try to become independent themselves. They're okay, well, let's work with China a little bit more. Let's work with Israel a bit more. Europe is trying to develop its own next generation of fighter jets. We'll get to that in a little bit. But again, each of these stories, I think, is exposing Europe as well and their inability to get things done. And I'll talk a little bit more about how, well, it's not like Europe is dumb. It's not like they haven't started it's not like Germany hasn't started two world wars within the last 100, 110 years. They have a lot of capability to become an industrial powerhouse and to do it very quickly. This Deutsche Welle article continues, Mattel, Weizmann, and other analysts say self-reliance is key to resilience. In a scenario involving a conflict in the Indo-Pacific, it is only logical that the U.S. defense industry would supply its military first. So that goes without saying if the U.S. is involved in something else, they're not going to care about Europe's needs as much. If the EU defense industry wants to scale up to supply European militaries and at the same time keep maintaining or even expanding its export relations, it will inevitably have to face another challenge. Rare earth minerals are crucial to building defense products, and there is currently only one main supplier, China. In the short term, there are no real alternatives, Mattel said. There are no other countries where rare earths can be produced this quickly and at this scale. So in becoming more independent from the U.S. defense industry, the EU defense industry might become more dependent on another big player, one that has also shown it does not shy away from using its power as leverage. So ideally, Germany and Europe would want to build its own empire, be able to go into Africa, North Africa, Greenland, get the resources that it needs, go to South America. We've talked about the Mercosur trade alliance that they've had there. But for the time being, they've got to look over to China as the alternative. And this again is a prophetic relationship. These countries working together to isolate the United States. And again, the United States probably welcomes this. President Trump and MAGA, they want the rest of the world to just take care of itself. This alliance with China, well, it's this weak alliance, this Mart of Nations alliance, is this European trade bloc and these Asian nations working together to besiege the United States. This is written about in the Isaiah booklet that we have. You can request that free of charge. It says, Mr. Fleury writes here, this powerful nation belongs to a mart of nations, including Europe. And what a dynamic market of nations it is. All of them are going to besiege America, Britain, and the Jewish nation. The Gentiles have most of the oil, but the U.S. guzzles a huge percentage of it. And then he goes through and explains how just the way these nations are interacting today proves their identity in Bible prophecy. It says they are trading mightily with the Holy Roman Empire, talking about these Asian nations, and suffer greatly when it collapses. I believe that these modern economic powers help to prove what Ambassador College taught about these nations many years ago. God intended that we know who most of these nations are today. Mighty modern powers like Japan and China had to be mentioned in end time prophecy. And Japan is another one that is moving more to the right, is rearming. Mr. Fleury goes through this prophecy in Isaiah 23 and talks about these businessmen of the Holy Roman Empire who are becoming the honorable of the earth, as it's described again in Revelation 18. They do business with the rest of the world. He writes, all of this is fulfilling God's purpose. The daughter of Tarshish is Japan today. The word daughter shows how these prophecies are dual. Two great trading blocks are positioning themselves to control the world. Both power conglomerates are discussed in Daniel 11 and Isaiah 23. But that trading partnership won't last long. Soon they will clash just before Jesus Christ returns and destroys both of them. So the target that unifies them is the United States. And it's, you can see it starting. It's forming as, well, we need to break away. We need to be dependent. And then because there's all these sorts of stories where you see this seething pot, the trade war, and they rally around, well, let's expose the United States debt. It's America's biggest vulnerability is that so much of our debt is held by enemy nations. Again, though, we have to be alert. We have to be awake, watching what is happening in Europe. These stories, again, people, they just zone out or they laugh. This one's from Politico. France and Germany's next generation fighter jet project is dead. And this is one of those ones where you would look at it and just say, well, Europe's a joke. Europe is not a threat. But like Mr. Armstrong said, there's going to be a realignment. It's going to be simplified. All of these stories, I think, they expose that something has to change in Europe, that Europe needs a strong leader. They need to simplify their chain of command there in order to get things done. The way they try to work together, they can't accomplish much. But you see that they want this army. They want this military, and that's the trend that you should be alarmed by. That's the trend you have to watch. This article from Politico says, the long-troubled Future Combat Air System, FCAS, being developed between France, Germany, and Spain is on the verge of collapse, four European officials in Paris and Berlin told Politico. So France is really the main driver here. Germany's on board, and they're trying to keep Germany along with it, but there's another coalition of nations in Europe that are also working on their next generation of fighter jets. And Germany's saying, well, we might just go along and work with them. Politico says the failure of the flagship program between three countries to build a sixth generation fighter alongside drones and a combat cloud would be a massive political blow to the French president. So you see the current framework is failing. They need Germany at the heart. That's what Mr. Armstrong said. Germany is the industrial heart of Europe, and Germany does not have that strong leader. It's not easy to get things done. For months, France and Germany have tried to iron out their differences. They had set a deadline. Well, it just goes through how much back and forth there is there between the two of them. German Chancellor Friedrich Merz has mulled a range of options between splitting the manned fighter component. Anyway, it just goes and talks about how they're looking at these other nations in order to build this next generation fighter jet. They don't want to be reliant on the United States. Again, the way they talk, it will take decades in order to move away here. But think back to those quotes from Mr. Armstrong. It will happen suddenly, and it can happen very suddenly, if there is that crisis like he mentioned, that economic crisis, they want to build an army. They're shifting away from the United States, but they need the will, the political will. They need the mechanism in place to do it, and then they need that motive. And a crisis will get them there very quickly. This was a quote. We've used this in our literature from Jean Monnet, one of the EU's founding fathers. He said, "Europe will be forged in crisis and will be the sum of the solutions adopted for those crises." Europe will be forged in crisis. And they're setting up the framework for it now. That's what needs to grab your attention, is that they have this desire to remilitarize. What should grab your attention is that President Trump and the United States are encouraging them to do it. This is a clip. It's a shorter clip just from Fox News talking about how NATO wants to shift more of the burden over to Europe. This is clip two.
NATO officials tell Fox the U.S. is looking to swap control of certain NATO military command centers with European partners.
Western Europe's investment in defense has been anemic, and some say may be too late. A British military think tank reports the U.K. would run out of ammunition in 8 days should there be a war in Europe.
So, again, it's those stories where you just look at Europe and think, well, there's nothing intimidating there. But the United States and all of the MAGA isolationists, they want to be done with protecting the rest of the world. They want NATO to be basically done away with, and Germany wants that too. But the talk is, well, why is the United States doing all of this? Let the Europeans take care of Europe. Germany is shifting their economy over to wartime production. They've been struggling. The auto industry is struggling over there. And what has jolted them is that suddenly everything is moving over to arms manufacturing. The auto plants are producing tanks. The train manufacturers are producing components for fighter jets or whatever it is. But a lot of this has just kind of masked or covered up their economic crisis. This is an article from Zero Hedge. Germany's recovery is just debt-fueled military orders. At some point, this crisis is going to hit. They're getting the good headlines now. It can look like things are going well. But at some point, there's going to be a massive economic crisis, like Mr. Armstrong said, that is really going to trigger this, be the catalyst for unification, for that strong man to take over. Friedrich Merz, this article says, finally has a positive headline. In December, industrial orders surged, but behind the costly statistical recovery lies nothing more than the buildup of a debt-financed defense sector. Again, this money is going to have to come from somewhere. If you can just keep spending and producing all of these products, these military products, well, where is the money going to come from? And you need a war. You need a war to basically support this industry, to make it so that the market is backing you up. Wars are expensive. They profit only a few people. I'll just skip quite a bit more of the detail, but it just talks about how the crisis has just been kind of shifted away or taken away from the other manufacturing sectors in Germany and then just put and collected into the defense industry. This article says the military buildup is basically the last gasp of a policy that, in stubborn Keynesian mode, keeps trying to replace the gaps in Germany's industrial economy with a managed economy. This strategy ties up resources and personnel, diverting exactly the capital needed for real investment under better conditions. Goods are produced that no one demands on the market. A few pockets get richer. It's classical client politics and the Berlin-Brussels style. Nothing new in the West, really. And that approach is sort of right, but it's another one of those things where it can just lull you to sleep, make you think that there's nothing there. But at the end of the day, that debt is debt. But at the end of the day, they're getting something out of it. They're getting tanks. They're getting weapons. And those things can be used. Those are assets that can be used. Don't be deceived into thinking Europe is powerless. Don't fall asleep thinking that, well, they can't make their own plane or they can't get anything done because of the politics of the EU. I mean, this is exactly how Mr. Armstrong said it would happen. He said that they wouldn't be able to get anything done because of that the structure that was in place. It would have to be simplified and pared down. Europe sees that need. Germany, of course, as we've seen, is more than capable of being that industrial superpower of Europe. And it's something that we have to watch. It's something that we have to be wary of. It's something that should cause us to turn back to those plain truth articles, turn to the trumpet. What is this about? I thought this quote, this is from the interview that we had, that Mr. Fleury had with Gadi Taub, and he was talking about, well, Europe is struggling with Islam, and of course Islam is a problem, but the reaction to it can be far, far worse. And notice what Taub said in this interview just last week. This is clip three.
Radical Islam is expanding and growing in many respects too, is that right?
Yeah, and the question is, when are we going to wake up? It can be, you know, I think that early is better than late, because first of all, I don't trust Europe, and its waking up can be extremely violent. I mean, we don't want to see a version of Nazism turn on Muslims. We don't want, that's not the cure. So we don't want to see, God forbid, extermination or a genocidal war on Islam. The radical forms, the jihadi Islam, the attempt to take over Europe should be stopped, and Europe should be clear in saying, if you want to live in these countries, in our countries, you need to respect our majorities.
I don't trust Europe, and its waking up can be extremely violent. That's what he said, and that echoes, again, a lot of what we've said on this program. Its waking up can be extremely violent, and it is waking up. NATO helped keep it asleep, so to speak, because the United States took care of everything, which isn't a wrong way for that to operate. In many ways, NATO has kind of just been like this silent way that the United States has had this empire, or kept them under wraps following World War II. Now, we're not going to directly occupy you. You can have sort of a military, but by and large, it's been the United States keeping that power that it defeated in World War II, keeping it submerged, which was the purpose of NATO, to keep Germany down. But now we want to, again, pretend that these nations are suddenly our allies, trust them, treat them like those lovers as is described in Ezekiel 23. But its waking up can be extremely violent, and it will wake up and it will happen very quickly. Our nations will stand aghast, as Mr. Armstrong said. I have another article here. I won't spend time going through it, just about how the mainstream political parties throughout Europe are suffering, dying, and these new parties like the AfD are resurgent. There is a realignment happening. Germany wants to be able to stand by itself. This article is interesting. It's from the Telegraph. Israel as well wants to be alone. Israel doesn't want to be reliant on the United States. This article at the Telegraph is titled, Israel Wants Out of America's Military Embrace. And this is, I think, maybe Bibi is trying to help President Trump's cause. If he can say, President Trump has to deal with a lot of people who say, stop helping the rest of the world, stop helping Israel. And again, Israel needs to be able to take care of itself. It can't be reliant on the United States, where every 4 years you could get an Obama or a Biden, or even now a Trump, where it's inconsistent or it's difficult to know exactly what they want. But you could see there might be an angle here where Bibi's saying, well, if we can break off from the few billion dollars we get from the United States, which is just pittance compared to what the United States spends everywhere on everything else, well, then maybe that will help President Trump because we've broken apart and maybe he'll support us more. I don't know. This article says, the Israeli prime minister had suggested that his nation be weaned off the American military aid it had relied on for decades. He wanted to do so within 10 years, a blink of an eye in military planning terms, at a time when Israel could be dragged into a looming war between the U.S. and Iran. The United or Israel gets a lot of its weapons from the United States, a lot of the rockets that it uses. But Israel also exports arms, and it's also been working a lot with Germany. I think all of Israel's submarines are German-made. You can look that up. Wikipedia is kind of neat. It just has a whole list of, like, you can just type in Israeli Navy and all of their ships. It shows you where they got them from or who manufactured them. And they work mostly with Germany. We'll talk about that alliance as well. But they're moving away from the United States. They don't want to be totally reliant on that one partner. Quietly, The Telegraph writes, Israel strategists wonder how far into the future they can be sure of American military support. While Donald Trump has good reason to claim to be the most pro-Israel U.S. president in history, the feelings of his MAGA base are open to question. In the decade before 2023, American weapons accounted for 65.6% of total military imports to Israel. Germany was the next biggest exporter at 29.7%, and then Italy. This shift over to Germany is significant to watch. It's another prophetic trend that we've been warning about for decades. America is just off on its own, and Israel, or Judah in Bible prophecy, is looking to Assyria, looking to Germany. This article by Mr. Stephen Fleury in the February 2008 Trumpet magazine, it's titled Band of Brothers. It's a great article to go through. Helps you learn some of the detail and the prophetic or the scriptures behind a lot of these prophecies and these trends that we watch. And he, just breaking into this article, he writes about this brotherhood between America, Britain, and Israel, and how close it's been for the past couple centuries. Unique in world history because they are brothers. Mr. Fleury says, yet even those who don't follow the trumpet can see from the headlines that these three nations are, even now, in the midst of an astonishing free fall from their former positions of world dominance. That's because just as God prophesied of our rise to power, he also prophesies of our simultaneous fall. Hosea 5 and verse 5 talks about America, Britain, and Judah falling together. But Mr. Fleury writes, immediately prior to this event, the Jewish state, because of a wound brought about by the peace process, will turn to Germany for help. And why would Israel, in this end-time crisis, turn to its historic and most notorious enemy instead of to America? It's because by that point, America's weakened state will be even worse than its own. The U.S. is off. It's disappeared from the world scene. It can't be trusted. Mr. Fleury says, it's also because the historical tie that once bound these brothers together is prophesied to completely unravel. God says in Zechariah 11, verse 14, then I cut asunder mine other staff, even bands, that I might break the brotherhood between Judah and Israel. That has happened. That's why this magazine asked nearly 4 years ago, as the U.S. war against terrorism continues to yield high bills, a steady body count, and a booming crop of anti-Americanism worldwide, is it possible that Americans will begin to think, why are we making ourselves such a target over that little country of Israel? That's been there for a while. And Israel turns to Assyria. Israel looks to Germany for help. They want to be able to stand alone. In this world where peace is breaking out, we've got arms deals breaking out everywhere. People want weapons. These nations want weapons. And a lot of them want nukes. This article from German Foreign Policy, I won't get too much into it. It's titled, Calls for Germany to Build Its Own Nuclear Bomb Grow Louder. Calls for the construction of a German nuclear bomb accompanying Friedrich Merz. Yesterday, for the European Union to stand up for itself with a new power politics, the EU must finally learn to speak the language of power politics and become a European power, Merz declared in his government's foreign policy statement. I think we went through that a couple episodes ago. Later on in this article, Merz's appeal for strength comes in the context of fresh calls for nuclear armament, either at EU or national level. And Germany, again, it's one of the most technically advanced nations in the world. There was the race in World War II because Germany was also trying to build a nuclear weapon. And the scientists that built it were German or were from Germany. Trends that we have. Germany talking about getting its own nuclear weapon is a trend that should alarm every American. And yet, as I'll cover in a few minutes, we're just asleep. This clip from Mr. Armstrong, I think it's added on a little bit more from one of the clips that we played at the beginning. But he talks about how suddenly these things are going to happen. This is clip 7.
And I can see now the events that is going to trigger the formation of reunification in Europe, the resurrection of the medieval Holy Roman Empire that we've been looking forward to, that is prophesied to come. Something has been holding it back. And a year ago, when Dr. Otto von Hotzenberg was here, and he'd come over here to see me on July the 10th last year, just about a year ago, he couldn't understand why they aren't able to get this unification through sooner. Something is causing it to lag and to hold it up. I said to him, I've been wondering about the same thing. But I believe that some event is going to happen suddenly, just like out of the blue sky, that is going to shock the whole world and is going to cause the nations of Europe to realize they must unite. Well, he said he believed that would have to happen too. Well, now I think I can see what may be the very event that is going to trigger it, and that is the economic situation in the world. Now, when the financial structure breaks down, all civilization is going to break down.
When the financial structure breaks down, all civilization is going to break down. Those rules that we've witnessed for the last 80 years since the end of World War II, that all goes out the window. We're seeing it. It's a trade war. Our nations are at war with each other. Trade wars lead to these hot wars. America is asleep. America is encouraging Europe to rearm. It's very much like 1930s Britain. I think it was the Prime Minister Halifax who, he was happy for the Rolls-Royce engines to be sent into Germany, even though they knew they were being used for fighter planes. And here we're in the same situation today. We'll send F-35s to Germany. We need the money. We're happy to make some more money. And people are just asleep to what is happening. Isaiah 56, verses 10 through 12. Churchill, he was a watchman. He watched and he warned while his nation was asleep. And America has the trumpet. America has Mr. Gerald Fleury warning. But everyone else, they're asleep. His watchmen are blind. They're all ignorant. They're all dumb dogs. They cannot bark, sleeping, lying down, loving to slumber. We have a dog, and when people come around, it barks. You know something is going on. And you get up, oh, what's happening out there? But when the dog is just asleep, things sneak up on you. And that's what's happening to the United States. Nobody is sounding the alarm. And then notice how it describes what these dogs are doing. Yea, they are greedy dogs, which can never have enough. And they are shepherds that cannot understand. They all look to their own way everyone for his own gain from his own quarter. Well, it's just about the money I can make. It's about what I can get out of this. They're greedy. Sell the weapons to Europe. That we're happy for them to have that. We're going to make so much money. Greedy dogs, which can never have enough. Verse 12, come you, say they, I will fetch wine, and we will fill ourselves with strong drink, and tomorrow shall be as this day, and much more abundant. They're drunk. They don't care. The way it is today is the way it will be tomorrow and forever. They're not sounding an alarm. They're not barking. People are asleep to what is happening. They're caught up in their vices. They think America is untouchable. The trend I wanted to talk about was just how addicted the United States is to marijuana. Just this form of escapism. The New York Times, a left-wing paper who has wanted marijuana to be made legal for decades, is actually saying we've gone too far. They write, it's time for America to admit that it has a marijuana problem. 13 years ago, no state allowed marijuana for recreational purposes. Today, most Americans live in a state that allows them to buy and smoke a joint. President Trump continued the trend toward legalization in December by loosening federal restrictions on medical marijuana and testing. And many said, well, that's not legalizing marijuana, but it's one step closer to it. It's moving in that direction. And there's so much money to be made. Oklahoma did it and said, well, it's going to be great. We'll get all this money from taxing CBD. And now it's every other store, it seems like, on these strip malls in rural Oklahoma are marijuana shops. And the smell is all over the place. And it's not weak stuff. It's getting stronger. And people are more in a daze. They're out of it. I mean, they can hardly function in just operating, you know, regular things in their lives. And to come and to say, well, you better be concerned about Germany, that would be crazy to them. They don't think about that at all. And you just see how the devil just gets everybody so focused on self. They can't even tell what's happening beyond their front yard. This Times article, they talk about how they supported the legalization of marijuana for a long time. But they said it's now clear. They said, well, if we legalize it, it won't be a problem anymore because the illicit trading or growing of it, that'll go away. You know, people will be able to do it in balance. But it's just like with any drug. That first hit, it doesn't do it. And it has to get stronger and stronger. And many of these drug addictions, they start with legal drugs. They start with the soft stuff. All of these painkillers that doctors prescribe and keep putting people on, there's loads of articles you can read about how that starts the slippery slope to where they get addicted to fentanyl. It's now clear that many of these predictions were wrong. Legalization has led to much more use. Surveys suggest that about 18 million people in the United States have used marijuana almost daily. This is America's army, our fighting age men are just addicted to marijuana. The wider use has caused a rise in addiction and other problems. Each year, nearly 2.8 million people in the United States suffer from these side effects from heavy marijuana use. They also end up in the hospital. It causes psychotic disorders and breakdowns. A lot of these shooters, mass shooters, are addicted to marijuana. I'll play one more clip. This is from Fox News, just reporting on the inevitable. I mean, they were another one that just loved the idea of legalizing it because we'll get all this tax revenue from it. And now we see, well, this was a tragic mistake, and nobody wants to pull back on it because there's just so much money to be made. Just sell out our nation so we can make money. The greedy dogs. This is clip 8.
So after years of many states moving toward decriminalizing and legalizing marijuana, a campaign is gaining support in Massachusetts to reverse their 2016 legalization of recreational marijuana. This as the new Wall Street Journal warns of the dangers of weed, saying, quote, doctors at Mass General Brigham Hospital found that the share of adolescents with psychiatric emergencies who tested positive for THC jumped nearly fourfold after the drug was legalized from recreational sale in the state.
The question is, do we want a big commercial industry that's promoting this, you know, that's selling gummies, that's got vapes that are almost pure THC, which is the ingredient in cannabis that gets you high? Do we want that on our streets? Do we want that in stores? Do we want billboards? Do we want the smell of, you know, flower cannabis everywhere? And people are starting to question that.
So, Alex, when you look at the data, the Americans ages 12 plus smoking marijuana, there's been a jump. I guess the big question is, did something change in the marijuana that is causing it to be different and people to react differently? Did the commercialization of it change the strands?
Well, you do. You have this really high potency cannabis that used to be, you know, maybe it was 1 to 3% THC. Now, if you smoke it, it's 20 or 30% THC. And again, you can have extracts that are basically pure THC that are really easy to smoke. You're not even smoking, you're just inhaling the vapor, or you're eating gummies, edibles. And so it's easy for people to consume a lot of THC. And THC is addictive. Cannabis is addictive, even though the people who back it say it's not. What we've seen is a tremendous number of people, almost over 20 million people who use daily. And there's absolutely no way that using large amounts of THC and cannabis daily is good for you. Just the same way that using a lot of alcohol daily is not good for you. So we've promoted, we've legalized an industry that has all these problems and is profiting essentially off addiction, off psychosis, off what's called scromiting, which is a really nasty condition where you start vomiting uncontrollably after using cannabis. That went up 15-fold in Massachusetts as well. We have all these problems. I mean, really, I do think it's going to take a long time for the political wind at the back of marijuana to change.
Can you go back after that? Ambassador College, under Mr. Armstrong, produced a booklet about marijuana. It says, sure, you are living in the shadow of the bomb. They talk about, there are a lot of stories today that are alarming. How do you react? You see man's inhumanity to man, nation against nation, race against race. You know life on this planet is threatened by nuclear warfare, chemical warfare, exploding populations, famine, disease epidemics, and pollution. You see man bent on self-extermination, or so it seems. It isn't a pretty picture. You have a good reason to be upset, but why stick your head in the sand? Why hurt yourself? Why become a moral and mental coward? Dulling your mind, your most priceless possession, isn't going to solve anything. You may get high and escape reality for a short time, but after you come down, the same old problems are staring you in the face. And there's the drug addiction, but there's a lot of people that just want to bury their head in the sand, that don't want to take action, that don't want to respond to world events. Well, I need to leave time for this Gadi Taub segment from the assembly that he gave from the Armstrong College students. It'll probably take you a couple minutes over. That can make up for Mr. Flurry ending early yesterday. This, again, was given last Wednesday when Gadi Taub visited our campus. He spoke to the students and faculty here, and there are three segments. We'll probably play them over a few episodes in the following week or two. But this is the first section from that assembly that he gave. Thank you so much for joining us on the Trumpet Daily. We'll conclude today's show with that segment. And, well, you could just go ahead and play that, guys in the booth.
In the Romans' eyes, the Jews were a crazy, fanatic sect, which made no sense. Because the Romans represented a universal idea of political rule in which all peoples should fit if they forfeit their independence. That's all. The Roman trade-off is you pay your dues to Rome, you give us your drafted soldiers for our legions, you pay your taxes, you put our statues in your temples, and in return, you get the roads, the aqueduct, rule of law, currency, and universal peace. there would be universal peace under Rome, the Pax Romana, as it was called in Latin. So Rome represented universal rule and universal peace. And Jerusalem, said Moshe Hess, represented particularism and particular identity, the preserving of your uniqueness. And in every generation, there were Jews who thought of their fellow Jews like the Romans thought of the Jews, crazy fundamentalist fanatics who are not willing to take part in the universal rule of peace, which will absorb and assimilate everyone. This universal rule of peace includes, as I said, giving up your independence and giving up your particular identity. And so there is reason why European nations resist the European Union, or many among them do, and there are reasons why many nations resisted the form of globalism expounded by Marxism under the Soviets, which attempted the same thing, right? It's the globalist version of international socialism. And now we have the progressive version of globalism, which we see promoted by Davos and by the European Union. So these, in all these forms, many Jews took place, because if you take the whole of Judaism, then it always had the universal element along with the particular element. And those who could not take the tension want to resolve it to one side and want to, and this is why you see now in Israel, we talked about this, Stephen, over lunch, why people ask me, why are some of the Israelis apparently anti-Israeli? Why do they join the progressives against Israel? And the reason is they are the Jewish version of globalism, and they see their Jewish brethren as an obstacle to that. Many anti-Semites around the world now also see Judaism as exemplifying a particularist and therefore exclusionary kind of identity. Because by being a particular identity, obviously you isolate yourself from other identities. So if you want to join Karl Marx or John Lennon and Imagine, then you have some universal version in which any form of particular identity is a problem. But what those who insist on a particular identity say is that a diluted universalism is not an identity. It is reducing human beings into functional atoms which are completely isolated from one another, which are morally disoriented, and which eventually are not willing to fight for anything particular. So they, in the end, they lose their individuality in this bland world where each of us is just an atom floating through space. It is my sincere belief that this is a terrible form of existence for human beings who require identity and meaning. And I can open a parenthesis here and say that I had a roommate who became a drug addict, and he was my dear friend. In fact, I'm going to meet him in Miami tomorrow. He's rehabilitated now for over 25 years, and I went through rehab with him, because they encourage you to bring friends with you. And I saw what radical individualism devoid of anything particular can mean. If you are not tied into any social network, then you collapse unto yourself. And then you are reduced to your animalistic side and lose your spiritual, and therefore your spiritual side, and with it, your well-being. because we human beings are, despite what we like to think, are not isolated individuals. Outside a family and outside of a community, we lose the will to live. We lose the reason to live. A reason to live is always something outside you. Unless you consider a drug addict's search for the next fix a reason to live. It's certainly a motivation, but it's not a reason to live. In order to want to live, you need to live a meaningful life. And what globalism in all its forms leads to is a form of life where you're just a generic individual with nothing particular tying you to anyone else. So what is the other end? And I'll say in a moment how this fits, how anti-Semitism fits into this dilemma too. At the other end is a particularist view. Now, I am not an advocate of crazy fanaticism of the form of Masada, that you, for the slightest infraction of mitzvot, of commandments, you are willing to commit suicide with the whole community. That's not what most Judaism is about. But it is about preserving a particular identity. So is that hostile to other identities? What progressives are trying to tell us is that every identity is built on the negation of others. By the way, this was the Nazi view of identity. The Nazi, the most important Nazi political thinker, Carl Schmitt, said that any group identity is defined by an enemy. It is, having a group identity means that you all inside the group know who your mortal enemy is. It is built on negation. I don't think that's true. Herzl, the founder of political Zionism, didn't think that's true. The Jewish rabbinical tradition didn't think that was true. And Woodrow Wilson didn't think that was true. The view that is promoted, that reconciles particularist and universalist elements in Judaism, says that every human being should be a member of a group, and that humanity is composed by a brotherhood of groups, not by a brotherhood of abstract individuals. That is, Zionism was founded on the idea of the universal right of all peoples to self-determination, in the terms of Woodrow Wilson. In the less fancy terminology of Donald Trump, it means make Israel great again. Make your country great again. Making America great again is not achieved by making everyone else subordinate to America. It means that each nation should take care of itself. If you look at Europe, then you see that the European Union is an attempt to prevent every single nation from being great again. It is a European universal identity which comes at the expense of all other identities. The Zionist conception of Jewish nationalism is based on the idea that universalism and particularism are reconciled by conceiving of universalism as a mosaic of many particularisms, if I may distort the English terms. And this is, in my view, the message, the original message of Judaism, and this is why Jews can think at one and the same time that they were God's chosen people and that all people were created in the image of God. Now, if you look at contemporary anti-Semitism, and this is not the foundational level, not the ground floor, this is the whole building. The whole building is built on negating one element of this reconciliation between the particular and the universal. So who are the heirs of the Nazis in today's politics? These are the jihadists. If you look at the covenant of Hamas, it is about killing every single living Jew. That is their professed ideology. This is the extreme side of particularism, where there is only one view and it should subdue everything else. Like the Nazis wanted to subdue the whole world, the jihadis want to subdue the whole world. If you look at their theology, whenever Obama said that Islam is a religion of peace, look, this is crazy. It is crazy because maybe there are peaceful variants of Islam, but the Muslim Brotherhood, which wants to kill all Jews, they're not a religion of peace. And if you look at their theology, it doesn't take a rocket scientist to figure it out, because they say the world is divided between two realms, Dar al-Islam and Dar al-Harb, the realm of Islam and the realm of war. Harb is war. That is, wherever Islam is not in control is the territory of holy war, which should be later conquered. So these are the heirs of Nazism. And lo and behold, once again, who is their mortal enemy? Judaism. Judaism is first, but make no mistake, Christians are next, because all infidels should be killed. It's just that the Jews represent the thing that they cannot live with. And after that, everyone else would be subdued. And who supports them? The globalists, the other side. Who is protecting, preventing Europe's ability to wake up to the danger? These are the same forces that support the European Union. These are the progressives, which think in terms of multiculturalism, universal multiculturalism, where the religion is diversity. Everyone will have their separate identity, and in the name of diversity, you accept Islam, because everyone is entitled to their own religion. And you do not care that the Muslim Brotherhood that you take into Europe is telling you that it is going to be unicultural and it is going to destroy you. So you hug it in the name of multiculturalism, and you let in an element which is racist and anti-Christian and anti-Western, and declares its intention of destroying the West.